Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast, the only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right. You ready, babe?
Yep. Let's do it, mama.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. I am so excited for today's birth story because it's one that inspired me in so many ways. So I think, if I'm remembering correctly, because hashtag mom brain, we all know that, I saw pictures of this birth process and experience on Instagram and immediately thought, we have to have them on the show. And so here we are, and that's what's happening. So we're chatting today with Amy and Mallory Caldwell, two mamas with an inspiring birth story to share of their son, Sebastian. And we get to hear about the insemination process, also who was going to carry and be the gestational parent this time around, because both women want to carry eventually and birth babies, but Mallory got to go first this time. And just the pregnancy process, choosing a midwife. Also, it was very important for them to choose a midwife that could support them and love them in a way that worked best for them and create that sense of community. And so they were able to find a queer midwife that works in the LGBTQ community and how significant that was for them. Talk about the legality of home birth in different states and how that impacts your process and your planning. And this birth story has some twists and turns and some back and forths. And I'm not going to give any spoilers. So I'm just going to let you listen in on what all of that had to offer and how baby Sebastian came into the world and he's here and just all of the awesomeness around that. So thank you so much to Amy and Mallory. And before we hop into that amazing story, I have to give a shout out to our amazing sponsor of today's episode, and that is Bump Boxes. Bump Boxes, if you haven't heard already, is a monthly pregnancy subscription service that is tailored to mom's due date. And each month, depending on the option that you choose, depending on your subscription, you get a box, a bump box full of 4 to 8 healthy, full-size products tailored to your due date. It's hassle-free as far as cancellations, returns, shipping, all of that great stuff. And I'm scrolling through their website right now, and you have different options like month-to-month, 3 months, 6 months, or the full 9 month shebang. And when you sign up for a subscription and use the code DIAH, you will receive 35% off your first box. Pretty awesome. And Pretty Awesome also describes my bump box that I got to try out when we partnered up with Bump Boxes. And this thing is chock full of awesome stuff, you guys. I can only imagine how exciting it would have been to get this box while I was pregnant, but I'm still excited about it. I'm not pregnant. Water bottles, natural lip balm, lotions, massagers, all kinds of really cool things that I wish I was getting on a monthly basis while I was pregnant. So treat yourself or treat a mama you know to a bump box subscription today. And like I said, with that code DIAH for 35% off your first box. So go do that. Trust me, you're going to love it. Okay, without any further ado, our conversation with Amy and Mallory Caldwell.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Amy and Mallory, welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
We're super pumped. We appreciate you all carving out some time and bringing little baby Sebastian along for the ride. So thank you again.
Yeah,
we're very excited.
So before we hop into baby Sebastian and how he came to be, and that's why we're all gathered here, basically, can you tell us just a little bit about yourselves and where you live and what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm Amy.
Mallory.
Yeah, that's my wife, Mallory. We live in Ohio. We own a dog walking company here. And that's what we do. This is our first baby. We've got three cats and two chickens. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome. So when you said dog walking company, both of our eyes lit up because we're like, oh, why can't they live here? Why can't we live there?
Totally looked at each other.
Like, cool. Yeah, we like it a lot.
Yeah.
What's the name of the company?
Life. So, we LePage Dog Walking, and it's a pretty good, like, I love being outside, so being out and being able to walk dogs is pretty nice, and it gives Mallory the freedom to stay at home with the baby, so. Mm-hmm.
Just do office work, so it's nice.
That's awesome. Love it.
Love couples that work together too. Definitely with that. So when you all decided to start growing your family, what were those conversations and what did you guys see initially as your options and eventually choose as far as bring in baby Sebastian Earthside?
Yeah. Well, we had discussed starting a family. We were going to start talking about it after we got married, which was a couple years ago. And after the honeymoon, we were home, we were settled back in, and we were just sitting here one day and we were like, oh, we should probably start talking about having a kid because, you know, that's what our plan was. So really the only option we had, I mean, we talked about doing like a known donor, but then, you know, if they came out with the quirks that our friends had, it would just be weird. So we actually, we went through a sperm bank up here. It's called the CryoBio. It's pretty popular. People come from all over to donate and to then purchase sperm. So.
And they ship out too, but since they're local, it was really convenient because we were able to just, before the, like we just would go and pick it up and then just take it right to the doctor. So we didn't have to worry about like any sort of shipping or purchasing beforehand. It was just like you bought like one vial and you took it to the doctor and you saw. But we started, we decided, so we both are going to carry, but Mallory's older. So we just thought, okay, we'll just start there. So.
Yeah, it was a super bizarre process though, because it's basically like the website was like Tinder for sperm. You could see profiles and, you know, silhouettes of them, and you could just like swipe left or right, like whichever one you wanted. We just filtered through until we find the right one.
But we were looking for someone that they do essays, so someone that, you know, seemed like jives well, seemed like they were donating for the right purpose, like you know, had a good energy to them, and then someone that kind of looks like both of us because we wanted to use the same donor for all of our kids so that they kind of had like a genetic link as well, since we'd be two different carriers.
That's, wow, that's really cool. So you both, just so that I'm clear, you both wanted to carry. Mallory goes first in this round. And to ensure that you can have that same donor's sperm, do you have some sort of agreement for when you do eventually want to carry carry Amy, or, you know, what's that like to make sure that you have the same donor's sperm?
Yeah, they, so they only allow 5 like family births within a radius just because like it's donor sperm and they don't want like any kind of complications.
Yeah.
Many people with the same genetics. So, and then they also tell you when like the supply is getting low, essentially.
So then you can like buy it in bulk basically and they store it there for you for when you need it.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay, great.
But, so far, since there's plenty left, we haven't had to do that. But we're keeping an eye on it just in case so that we can still have that going forward.
Yeah.
All right. So once you, you know, went that route, you guys did IUI, correct? And that's intrauterine insemination. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they essentially like, it's just the sperm. So they like spin out the semen and freeze it. And then they thaw it and they feed like a catheter in, through your cervix and
right into the uterus.
Yeah. And then they put it straight into the uterus. So, we go into the office to do that, but they have like a plunger to like push the sperm in. And I was able to do that. They'd let me push the plunger.
That's cool.
That is so neat. Yeah. And so Mallory, what was that process and experience like of going through the inseminations and, you know, preparing to be pregnant? How was that for you?
I mean, preparing for it was pretty easy. Mm-hmm. You know, you just took prenatals, took care of yourself, you know, just kind of prepared your body for it.
I didn't do any medication.
Yeah, I didn't do any medications to help us get pregnant. It
okay.
was just, we just walked the sperm, went in and had it done. But the process itself was slightly painful because, you know, they bypass your cervix altogether and go straight into your uterus. So as soon as that sperm hits your uterus, you kind of contract and it's a really painful experience. But I mean, it took us 3 tries. The second try we early miscarried. And then third try was a charm. Amy and the doctor actually high fived afterwards. So it was a pretty good experience.
Sealed the deal.
It was pretty, yeah. And the 2-week wait with, Sebastian's pregnancy was very peaceful. We both felt really good about it. We had good vibes the whole time and it was like, I knew, that it would be positive. Like I felt really good.
Yeah, we both did. It was good.
So were you all prepared sort of emotionally and mentally that it might take a few tries?
Yeah. When we did the initial consult with the OB office that did the insemination, we were told it would be an average of 7 tries.
Oh, wow.
5 to 7. Okay. 5 to 7 was the norm before it would take. So we actually got lucky with 3.
I think the hardest part is not knowing when it would take. Because if I knew going into it, it'd be 3 tries, the emotional like toll it took wouldn't be as hard, but to not know and to like have like it fail is really like, it's tough, especially when you're not just like having sex to have a baby. You're shelling out money and going to the doctor and doing the weight. And just sort of like,
We couldn't just keep trying a bunch of times. It was,
One time a month or every, we ended up it was 2 months between tries. Mm-hmm. It's hard, but as soon as it took, it was just looking back on it, it doesn't seem as hard of a process, but when you're in it, you're really in it.
The emotional toll of it is a lot.
Wow. Now, through this experience, were you able to connect with any other families going through similar circumstances, or had you connected with any other moms, you know, going through IUI? Were you able to have any sort of support like that?
Sort of. Our friends who had just gotten married, they are a queer couple as well, and they were going through the process. They're actually still going through the process. It's been pretty hard on them. Mm-hmm. So we are, but we're the only couple that we know that have done like, that have done like the IUI procedure and have had success so far. And since it was only three tries, it was really like, we just leaned on each other and, sorry, we have a diaper change situation.
I get it.
No worries.
He gets mad anytime he gets wet. Like, even if he's in a like a stay dry cloth diaper, he cries as soon as he pees. So. But yeah, so the IUI process, since we weren't, we didn't end up doing it for as long as we thought, we sort of just leaned on each other and would talk through it and just like talk about options and, you know, try and stay in the moment, enjoy our time as like a twosome without any kind of baby or pregnancy. And we tried to do like a lot of like going out and spending time, the two of us, and trying not to dwell on it because it can really take over just your thoughts and your feelings and a lot of who you are if you get really stuck in the process. So we did our best to not stress about it too much, knowing that it could take, you know, 6 months, 9 months. And then we just got lucky when it happened after the third try. But
that's amazing. And so once you were pregnant and it seemed like this pregnancy was keeping, you mentioned, you know, as we talked a little bit before connecting, that you didn't always think home birth, but eventually at a certain stage, somewhere around week 16 or so, you chose home birth. What was that decision-making process and how did the shift happen?
Yeah. So we originally, we knew the OB, my mom is a nurse practitioner and teaches at the college near here. So she is friends with like a lot of people in family medicine and practice. So the OB that we did the consult with about the IUI and the practice we were with, we just sort of called them, when we had a positive test. And you know, like most people, like you just like, I don't know, call your OB and go in and just sort of start. I think like you had a similar thing. Like, I don't know, I'm pregnant. Like, I guess I just call the OBGYN, like go in, get a confirmation. Like, what do I do? And it's super weird because in the beginning, you know, like there's nothing you really can do, but you feel like you should be doing a lot. So you're like, what do I do? Like, who do I call? And so, yeah, we just called the OB, started going to the OB, and they had midwives. So we were interested in using the midwives and we started doing hospital tours. And we toured the hospital we ended up really liking. And that's the hospital we, you know, ultimately ended up delivering Sebastian at. We ended up, so we thought we would stick with them. We thought we'd maybe go to that hospital. But when we started looking for a doula, the first doula we met with, I think she actually listens to your podcast, but she was like, everything you're saying sounds like you'd be really like happier delivering at home. I was like, okay. Like, and we had watched The Business of Being Born.
Love it.
Yeah. you know, we talked to one of my friends who had had a home birth in Michigan about her experience and sort of just started looking into options and what that would look like for us.
Well, the more we talked to the OB office we were at, the more that I was very uncomfortable with the way that they went about things, the amount of interventions that they were, you know, going to have, regardless of a healthy or not pregnancy. And I just, the less interventions, the better for me. So home birth was really a no-brainer.
So, and then we had, we met with the doula we ultimately used, and she had suggested, actually, I think pretty much everyone we talked to suggested we talk to who we eventually used for a midwife, because she's a queer woman, works a lot in the LGBTQ community, and is just, I mean, she's a really great person in general. And so we kind of were like, all right, like, let's meet with Rachel and see what we think. And then we met with her and we were like, in love. So like, okay, yeah, like home birth is like, this is where we should be, like, because she does, you know, like the appointments in our home. And it was super comfortable, like, you know, longer appointments instead of just the in out kind of rotation, a lot more personable, and it was just a better feeling all around. So, you know, we had met with the doulas and we just kind of started transitioning into the thought of home birth. And once we met with Rachel, we were sold. Yep. So
that's so cool. That's so exciting. And then what was any sort of response or feedback from friends or family on the home birth decision?
Most of our friends, they were like, oh, we pretty much expected you guys to go the home birth route. We're just like, if you met us, like, you know, our house is very old lady, and we're just those kind of people.
Like, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Actually, when we were planning on a hospital birth, we had met with our friends, and she was like, really? Because they paid you for home birth,
yeah,
people.
Yeah. My parents were pretty supportive. You know, they thought it was weird that I was pregnant, more or less, but just because, you know, 31 and, you know, gay and never had kids before, so, but your mom.
My aunts are more, like, masculine, like, you're right. Not the typical lady.
Yeah, but your mom, being a nurse, she had some reservations about it in the beginning.
Yeah, she was not super keen on it. It made her very uncomfortable. She worked in the NICU for years when I was younger and before she had me. And I, you know, I had shoulder dystocia, like, for her birth, like, for me. So, like, her experience with that and just, like, seeing, you know, preemies and NICU babies, I think just, like, kind of colored her vision of birth to be, like, a scarier thing. So she was not terribly on board. And also, so in Ohio, home birth isn't legal. Like, yeah. Not illegal, but they don't work well. Like,
midwives aren't, like, they're not.
They can't
get
licensed. Yeah, they can't get licensed. So the they don't, like, it's hard to work with a midwife in conjunction with, like, a hospital transfer and some things like that because of the legality. So it becomes a bit more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That just always continues to amaze me how it varies state to state and, you know, some of the ability or inability to connect and, you know, collaborate in terms of care. And if there does need to be a transition of care, how that can be, that's interesting. And I feel like it adds an unneeded element to an experience of pregnancy and birth planning, you know, for the family.
It totally does. Especially when it's just like all about like legality issues and logistics. And, you know, it puts a few like kinks in the road to birth and makes it a little more complicated and where it shouldn't need to be.
So did you all have to do anything different with your prep given the state of home birth in Ohio?
I don't think so. But I mean, we've only ever done Ohio home birth. We did have to find you a Rogam shot elsewhere.
Oh yeah, that was tough because I'm Rh negative and the donor we used positive, so I had to get a Rogam shot. But they wouldn't. No doctor would write for it to be filled at a pharmacy for the midwives to give it to us because they're not doctors technically in their eyes. So
and the midwives couldn't write for it because they're not licensed here.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of like. We ended up finding like a low cost prenatal care that where they didn't do hospital delivery.
Yeah, they just did prenatal and postnatal care, and that was it. And so we were able to get in with them and get the shot when I was 28 weeks.
Mm-hmm. But that was, it was tough in the moment because it was one thing that we really couldn't quite figure out because the midwives don't have that kind of access here. And it was something that we didn't want to not have.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
One thing I want to touch on, Amy, I know we emailed about this a little bit, but I'd love to hear for audience and other families and mamas, you know, like you guys. There were some, I guess you could call it challenges around Mallory, you know, being pregnant and, you know, searching for clothes or, you know, you said that sometimes people didn't even really realize you were pregnant. Can you share a little bit about that?
You said searching for clothes and Mallory's face went, oh God.
Don't remind me.
It was, well, because maternity clothes in particular are very feminine.
Yes.
And you wear pretty much exclusively men's clothing.
Yeah. It's just, it's what I'm comfortable in, you know? And so, I mean, we did thrift stores. We actually even went to some maternity shops to see if we, they had anything that I could use. But the women's t-shirts, like the sleeves are just so small and short. Like I felt like I was like the Hulk in them. And, you know, pants are just so tight. And I just, I was miserable trying to find clothes. I wound up pretty much living in sweatpants and basketball shorts.
We did sweatpants, basketball shorts, and we'd go to the thrift store and try and find men's shirts that were like extra long so that they didn't like become belly shirts. But it was interesting. And it did take a long time. No one really talked to you about being pregnant.
Yeah, like, it wasn't until the very end. We were about 2 weeks out from him being born when the first person was like, oh my gosh, when are you due? Because I think people just thought I was an angry, overweight man walking around because, you know, so it was just like, you know, baggy basketball shorts, baggy t-shirts and just this belly and nobody really thought anything of it. So,
wow. And how did that feel? Did that create anything for you as far as any sort of emotional impact or was it frustrating, you know, or, and how did you experience pregnancy?
The clothes situation was very difficult for me. I had several breakdowns. I mean, going shopping was miserable. I mean, we'd walk into a store and I knew right away I wasn't gonna see anything I liked. And it was just the clothes aspect of it was really tough for me. And, you know, I think that it's silly this day and age that there's not a market for like butch pregnant women. That's just my personal opinion.
Or anywhere that you can, like, not even online, like, there's nowhere to find anything.
Nope.
And we're not crafty, so we can't, like, sew or make it. And it just became a thing. And even your mom thought it was, she, like, when you told her you were pregnant, she was like, oh, that's interesting, because I can't picture you pregnant.
Right.
And it was like, well, I am.
So picture it.
So you don't need to picture it. It's happening. But it was,
But the actual pregnancy itself, I was very okay with. It was actually really smooth sailing for me as far as, you know, morning sickness and emotions go. I had none, basically. I was just kind of...
You're pretty even keel. You're pretty much like you, but with a belly.
Yep. It was the clothes was really what I think, was the biggest issue with me. Was
especially
just
because when you're not wearing maternity clothes, you basically just feel like a fat person trying to, like, put on pants.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
Well, two things come up for me when I hear all of that. One, anyone listening with clothes market savviness, you have a huge opportunity right now. Yeah. Someone is going to listen to this and jump on. And I feel Mallory, but by the time if you choose to get pregnant again, it will be a different experience. So I'm going to put that out there and manifest that for you. And then the other thing is just the different expressions of pregnancy and how, to what you said, you know, some friends or family couldn't picture you pregnant or saw you as a pregnant woman and still couldn't really picture you pregnant. I think by sharing your story like you are, it creates this amazing opportunity to see the variations and the beauty of pregnancy and how it unfolds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was, I mean, like, the actual, and like, it was great. I mean, like, you were wonderful pregnant. Like, we, like, when it was, like, the two of us together, it was great. It was just a lot of input from the outside world on what pregnant people should look like and what pregnancy should look like and how it should go, as opposed to, like, our family structure and what that looked like.
Yeah. So let's shift a little bit into birthing time. And once we knew that was happening, so we're preparing for home birth, but then what would a birth story be without some twists and turns and some monkey wrenches?
Yeah.
So just walk us through that as best as you can.
So our 37-week appointment was great. We rented an aquadoula, which was nice because it was January when you would do. And we weren't sure how long the labor would be, and the aquadoula has a heating element, so we knew that the water would stay warm. So we rented an aquadoula.
What is that, by the way?
Set up in our living room. The midwife came to do like the 37-week check, make sure we had like our birth kit and supplies, check the baby's position. He was perfect, head down, beautiful. We didn't know if he was a boy or a girl.
Yep.
We didn't find out. So, but they checked baby's position. We were cleared for home birth, and that was great. And we were very aware of positioning through the whole thing. We had taken a Bradley class. We had our doula who does a bunch of spinning babies. We had the exercise ball here, which you basically lived on. And we really wanted to ensure like that he was head down and in a good like anterior position, like good and set for birth. We were very deliberate with that.
And then 38 weeks rolled around, and our second midwife, who missed our 37-week appointment, came by to check and just do her own thing. And a couple days prior to that, we were at Amy's parents' house, and I was having some pretty gnarly contractions, Braxton Hicks, whatever. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, your belly looks like it's changed shapes. And I was like, oh, well, maybe. I mean, I'm getting close to my due date. Well, we came to find out from the midwife that he had actually slipped for each. Well, she had thought he had slipped, and she couldn't find the head, so she sent us for an ultrasound, and they did confirm that he was, in fact, transversed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to a full breech.
Yeah, he was transversed, and so we thought, okay, maybe we can get him to slip back down, since his head was kind of at your hip. And we thought we felt what would be a flip back to like the cephalic like vertex position. And so we had our midwife come on Christmas Eve, I think it was, and she fell and she was like, I'm really sorry, Mallory, but like this up here is a head. And it was like up in her ribs. So we're like, okay, that was not the direction that we wanted baby to turn.
Breech baby in Ohio, I mean, it automatically disqualifies you for a home birth, and you're pretty much done. Like, it's pretty much a C-section. That's where you are. They won't deliver breech.
We, our midwife doesn't do breech for first-time birth. She would be able to refer us to, she said that there was a midwife who would deliver breech, but she wasn't terribly comfortable with it. And then we could also, like, she could refer us to some doctors for like a gentle kind of cesarean or a external cephalic version. You know, she was trying to give us options, but it was hard to like, you know, have everything prepared for this like beautiful home birth, and have it all like checked out, and then just like last minute, baby flips.
Yeah.
So we did a bunch of acupuncture, chiropractic. It was all around Christmas. So we were just like throwing things at it and hoping that something would take and the baby would flip.
Doing handstands and an indoor pool.
We did like hypnotherapy. We had a doula that does hypnobirthing and hypnotherapy come by, and she did some like breech flip stuff and gave us like a lot of like hypnobirthing tracks on flipping a malpositioned baby, which was really great. We met a lot of like really nice people through the process, and like grew our birth team exponentially just for like outside people, because I mean there were so many people at that point involved. But it was New Year's Eve and he was still breached, so we decided that we would we went into an OB and decided that obviously it wasn't looking like the baby was going to flip back, so we went into schedule an external cephalic version on January 2nd to see if we could get him to flip.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't schedule it earlier because we thought since he flipped breech so late that we could get him to flip back without having to do a medical intervention. But since that hadn't worked, we decided like one last ditch effort is we'll try and have a doctor like flip him.
Yeah.
And then do you want to start with the birth?
Oh yeah, I can. Do you want me to start with the birth?
That would be awesome. Just to clarify, what you scheduled is basically like a medically interventioned flip. Is that correct? Like how I heard that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So yeah, basically we go in and it took a team of doctors.
They basically just like push on your stomach and like, yeah, just physically flip the baby.
Yeah.
Oof.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the 31st. We went in to schedule it for the 2nd.
It was around that.
I woke up at 5 a.m. pretty much on the dot on the 1st of January with cramps. And I was like, not sure if this is labor or not.
It was labor.
I'm gonna go back to bed and see. Because, you know, Braxton Hicks, you walk, you eat, you sleep. And then if it goes away, it's not actual labor. Well, I woke up at 8. It was labor. So...
And you were having contractions every about 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were leaking some fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like, okay, well.
Yeah. So
they're going to start planning to flip him tomorrow. Like,
yes. Yeah, so we talked to our team of midwives. We talked to our doula. They actually got in contact with the OB office in the hospital that we were going to have to go to on the 2nd. And they were able to get us in on the 1st, but it wasn't going to be until later. So we did the putsy-putsy part of pregnancy. We hung out around the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was the 1st. So we went to Amy's parents' house on inactive labor. We go to Amy's parents' house and we
ate.
Had lunch.
We had pork and sauerkraut. I called my mom. I called my mom and I was like, hey, so Mallory's in labor, but like we're still going to be there. I was like, see you at noon. She was like, what?
Yeah.
Having a doula and like our birth team was really there's so much support in more ways than we anticipated, because they would do the doctor calls, they would work with the hospital for scheduling, and they were the ones that would ultimately like that got us into the OB practice and that got us into the hospital and that would let people know we were coming. So we didn't have to worry about any of that. We just let them know what was going on. And they just told us, like, when to be and, like, where.
Yeah, where.
That's fantastic.
The OB office they hooked us up with was actually pretty home birth friendly, which was nice. It was about 3:30, I think, on the 1st. We got into the hospital.
We met our doula there.
Mm-hmm. You know, we discussed the options of the EDC?
Yeah, ECD.
ECD. And we ultimately decided that I would, despite everything that I wanted, I needed an epidural, which was not ideal.
But your uterus was contracting, and they wanted to
relax you a little bit so that they could work with the baby. And in the event that they couldn't flip him, and I, for bump is what we called him at the time. They couldn't flip bump, then I would have to go in basically for an emergency C-section then. So the epidural was just a better option than having to be put under, if something went awry.
And they really didn't think, they prepped us a lot for not flipping him, because you had an anterior placenta. You were 39 and a half weeks, and you were measuring large. They thought it was a pretty big baby, or like, you know, an average size baby. Yeah. I don't know.
But I had almost double the normal amount of fluid, of amniotic fluid. So there was some room for him to move around in there a little bit. So they got us all prepped. Doctors came in. They explained what they were going to do. Couldn't feel a thing, which was nice.
Well, the epidural part was terrible.
Yeah, the epidural was pretty rough. For anybody who hasn't had an epidural, they're not fun. So they came in and they tried a couple times to flip him. Then they were unsuccessful, and we were pretty much at this point, I had made peace with a cesarean. It was a few days prior, and I was like, you know, this is probably what's going to happen. And I was pretty much at peace with it. And then our doula had recommended them invert the bed so that my head was down and my hips were up so they could drop his butt out of my hips and have a better chance. And we all held our breath. Everybody was watching. They got a good stance. And
they really push on that belly, like full body weight, like on top of you.
And all of a sudden,
just like
the belly shifted. I saw it move and they were like, oh shit.
They like got that. He was like, well, you didn't say it at first. He was like, oh. And then he was like, hold, I think. Mm-hmm. And then he like got the ultrasound. And he was like, that's a head. That's like, oh, like, and everybody, I think, was very surprised that he flipped. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I texted our birth photographer.
Yeah. But just like that, our chances of a home birth were back up. The doctor, he's like, honestly, he's like, you know, I want to induce you now. And he's like, not induce, I was already in labor, but.
Well, he said he'd like to break your water.
And he wanted to get this thing going. And he's like, but I have a feeling that's not in cards for you. And I said, nope, I'm going home. So they allowed me to wean off the epidural,
which
and active labor with contractions 3 to 4 minutes apart.
The midwife at the hospital was texting with our midwife, and they were kind of like in cahoots with me. We were keeping Mallory in the dark. But our midwife was like, I'm not sure she should wean off the epidural. Like the midwife at the hospital was texting her, like, she's contracting every 3 to 4 minutes. Like, I'm not sure she'll be able to handle the pain once it's back. Because, you know, usually you build up to the pain tolerance. Like, if you just have contractions suddenly, it's not as easy to get back into, like, the pace with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's like being thrown on a treadmill and it's going at, like, 10 miles an hour and you haven't been running. Yeah, it's like,
exactly.
Go.
That's what it felt like.
Exactly. But, I mean, we had, you know, our sights really just set on this home birth. And the fact that he flipped, it was like, we got to try.
We had to try it. We had put so much effort into it, and it was what we wanted to do. And we had this space set up, and it was beautiful. And, they took the epidural out. And as soon as I was able to walk to the bathroom and use the bathroom, I was cleared to go home.
Our doula was like, I've never done this, because we were walking to the elevator to go down and out to our car, and she would like stop in the hallway and have a contraction and sway. And we were like, she was like, I've never just like left the hospital like this.
With somebody in
accident. And we like loaded up the car. I was driving, like, Mallory was like, is this a ridiculous decision? Like, we're currently leaving the hospital. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I have to imagine as you were leaving, people were like, no, you're going the wrong way. You're supposed to be going back up.
Pretty much.
We got some interesting looks from like the night security guard and stuff. I mean, we left. It was around 11 when we left.
Uh-huh.
So it was pretty late.
And it was always interesting because even in the Bradley class, we were like, man, we did this wrong. Because she was like, we'd leave the Bradley class and she was like, I'd be a great coach. And I'm like, I'd be an amazing birther. Mm-hmm. So we were driving home and Mallory's like mid-contraction, like, you're doing a great job driving, honey. Like, like great. You're doing so good. And I'm like,
you're doing a great job not hitting those
people. Yeah, she's just like, you're this is so great. You're doing so great. And I'm like, you're in labor. Like, thank you, but I'm not doing anything. I'm just driving.
Yeah. Yeah, so we left and we were on our way home at that point to try for the home birth.
So we got home, filled, like I started filling up the birth tub. Mal went upstairs.
Took a shower.
Yeah, I was working. Our doula was up there with her. Our doula alerted the birth team. So our photographer got here. And then our main midwife. And then eventually later, our second midwife. So our birth team was our two midwives, our doula and our birth photographer. And yeah, so labored through the night. Very long night.
It was a long night.
Because, you know, usually in the first stages of labor, you'd want to sleep. And we didn't have that luxury. We slept in the beginning, but then we had a full day of trying to flip a baby. So really, like, we got home, your contractions were every 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just in it after a long day and just all night. You were in and out of the tub. I think... We did
on every surface in the house.
We did absolutely every position you could labor in, like shower, birth tub, hands and knees. Mm-hmm. We did like the labor dance. We did like rocking. We had a birth ball. Our doula had like a extra large peanut ball, which kind of made for like you could get into like an assisted squat with mm-hmm. it. Yeah, it was. So we just went for it.
Wow.
And then the sun rose, which was really nice because towards the end of the night, you're really exhausted and it's dark, but the sun came up and it was kind of like a
new day.
Yeah. It was like a breath of energy. And so we just kept going, kept trucking. And you labored very well.
Yeah, they checked me and I was a 7.
Stretchy seven.
And then I continued to labor for a few more hours. They checked me again.
Because you were feeling pushy.
I was feeling pushy, yeah. And the contractions were just one on top of another, They just, I felt like I was like in a 25-minute long contraction. It was insane. And they checked me and I was at a 9.5.
You had like a lip.
Yeah, I was at a 9 with like a partial lip. So still wasn't quite time to push. But the problem was is that he hadn't dropped.
And we were doing some spinning baby stuff to try and get him down. We were doing some stuff during contractions to try and get, like, his head engaged. So different exercises and different techniques to try and, like, drop him down. But it was not...
It did not work. And after almost 2 days of... It was about 30 some odd hours.
36, I think. Yeah.
We decided that it wasn't going to happen at home. He wasn't dropping. I wasn't making any progress.
And the night, it was getting dark again.
It was getting dark. I hadn't slept. Wow. I hadn't eaten anything since lunch on the first.
So this is the second now. You're going to the evening of the
second. Yeah, we're rounding the third. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Evening of the second. And since she had lunch, and then we did the version. And by the time we got back from the version, you basically weren't hungry.
Yeah.
So I was trying to kind of feed her like bites of like honey sticks and some peanut butter. We were trying to get fluids in her, but the active labor part was just so forceful for so long, and you were just running on empty.
Yeah. So we wound up transferring for exhaustion. They were ready for us when we got there.
We didn't have to triage. They just took us straight into a labor and delivery room.
It's the same hospital?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Same hospital.
We wound up actually having the same doctor, which was nice. But our whole birth team went with us. While we were there, you know, we broke the water, got the epidural, trying to get some sleep.
epidural didn't work.
Yeah, the epidural wound up failing. They put it in too far and it became more of a spinal block, and I metabolized medicine really fast. So they had to redo the epidural at about 2:15 in the morning. That one took, and I still hadn't made any progress, so I was still at a 9. He hadn't dropped at all. They broke my water. There was meconium present. I was starting to get a fever.
Which they were actually very good at the hospital. Yeah, the meconium was a non-issue. Mm-hmm. And they let her labor for 12 hours without any progress. And they didn't suggest any kind of intervention. They just let you do you.
Yeah. It wasn't until the very end that they wanted to.
Yeah, they were really great there.
The very end, though, they wanted to do an intrauterine monitor where they just put something up there to monitor contractions to make sure they're strong enough to bring the baby down since I hadn't progressed. And they were talking about doing Pitocin. And at this point, I mean, we're going on almost 2 days straight of this. And so I made everybody leave. We woke Amy up.
I was sleeping in the birth tub.
She was. We woke everybody up. Everybody left. Amy and I had the conversation. I explained to her what was going on.
Because I had been asleep through all of this.
Yeah, and told her exactly what had happened. And I said, they're not putting anything else up, man. I'm tired of this. It's going to be safer to get him out now than to continue to do this monitoring. My water's been broken for 12 hours.
I also knew, I mean, looking back on it, I know, this had to be what it was, because I did not think that the Pitocin would, he had been handling natural contractions very well, but it had been 48 hours and I just didn't think the Pitocin would be very good for either of them. I figured it just messed them up. Yeah. If the contractions weren't as strong, then there's probably a reason for that. And we probably shouldn't force that.
Yeah. I decided to have the C-section. I said, we're going to get him out now. It's going to be better for everybody. And Amy agreed. So we brought everybody back and we let them know what was going on. And
We went in. I was, because I had slept so hard in such a short period, I was super shaky. And then the adrenaline and the nerves, there was a time where they didn't think I'd make it into the OR. I was about to vomit, and the doula was giving me peppermint drops that you usually give laboring moms for nausea. So I was my entire body was shaking and everything was fuzzy, and I was I was 100% sure I was going to vomit.
Yeah, but they bust me
the doula gave me some crackers and some peppermint drops and got me in working order. And then they took her and prepped her, and the OR was it was very bright. It was being outside. I remember because when I walked in, I just remember thinking it was such a bright white light, but it wasn't stark. It was being outside on a really sunny day.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost pretty. The doctors, it was the same doctors that had
flipped him.
The two doctors that had flipped him were the ones that were there. Everyone was super nice. And the procedure was pretty quick, not too bad. If you want to talk about that.
Yeah. So, it was just, they didn't have to suction him out or anything. They pretty much just opened me up and there he was. So they brought him out and
nowhere near your pelvis.
Nowhere near my pelvis. He hadn't dropped at all. So they dropped the curtain down. Amy got to announce the sex of the baby since he didn't know, and that was a big moment. We cried and they took him to the warmer to make sure he was okay, and then we were immediate skin to skin and wheeled off to the recovery room.
Even our midwife was there in recovery and she was where's the baby? And it was oh, he's right here, because he was just on Mallory's chest from they checked him out.
We weighed him
9 pounds 8 ounces. And he was just on her chest. So just skin to skin, and they wheeled you into recovery like that, and then they actually wheeled us into the maternity ward like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was skin to skin
for 2 hours.
Hours. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
That, you guys, that all of it, just wow. Mallory, how was healing and recovery for you in those first few days? And I mean, even now, you're still just like, what, 9 weeks postpartum, but you know, how are you feeling and how was that experience?
I'm feeling really good today. Like I'm having a really good day. I've been having some really good days the past couple of days, but initially in the hospital, because I mean, as soon as the epidural wears off and the pain meds wear off and, you know, they take the catheter out, you then, like, you're up. Like, that same day, they have you up, they have you walking. You know, you have to use the bathroom on your own. It was a lot. It was very painful to get in and out of bed because you can't use your ab muscles because they, you know, they cut through those tissues and they sever those nerves to do the cesarean. So, it was tough. The first couple of days was really tough. I couldn't get up out of bed to get him out of the bassinet. Thankfully, you know, owning our own business, Amy was able to take some good time off. So she never left the hospital. She was there, you know, day in, day out for the 3 days that we had to stay there. And then she was home with me for 2 weeks after. So the hospital was really tough. I couldn't, breastfeeding was hard, just because, you know, the cesarean, your milk comes in a little bit later. So we had to supplement with formula, but, so it was tough. We got home and every day got a little bit better. By 2 weeks postpartum, I was folding laundry. And I was able to, but I'm stubborn. I was able to pick him up finally and, you know, walk him around a little bit. And it was nice. So every day is a little bit better. Yeah, I'm almost 10 weeks postpartum, 10 weeks on Wednesday.
Wow.
And I'm feeling really good. Feeling really good. The scar's healed. The incision's healed now. It's just a scar. So I'm starting to regain the feeling in my stomach and everything. And
yeah, because the nerves were cut, so it kind of had that, like, it was like a numb pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but other than that, I mean, everything's been going really well. I really can't complain. I mean, we've got this beautiful baby boy here. So we didn't get the home birth we wanted, but.
Which is hard.
Yeah. It was tough to digest in the beginning, but.
Getting better.
Yeah. He's here, he's healthy, I'm healthy, and that's all that we can really ask for.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's tough to not have things go as planned, but it's sort of like as soon as labor hits, I mean, it's like the universe is at work and you just kind of are on for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So you just like deal with like it as it comes, but there's only so much you can do to like change it. It's kind of once it's in motion, it just happens.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to say, just hearing the whole story, I mean, it speaks to who you both are as women, as mamas, as partners, the amazing team you assembled, and everything you did to lead up to the experience to create it. I mean, shoot, if you are to plan for a home birth and not have it go home birth, it sounds like everything just unfolded. Like you said, the universe is at work and everyone was well, you know, everyone's favor was being taken into account. You know, the care you received sounds outstanding. I just think, you know, mamas out there need to hear examples of stories like this, that, you know, you can aim and plan and, you know, vision what you want to experience. And then if it does go a different way, like you can have this experience too. Like you can carry the essence of that intention through the whole thing, even though the location might be different. So I just really, I want to acknowledge the both of you for that, that it's just beautiful to hear how it unfolded. And on the other end, you know, Amy, you were saying that you would still like to experience a home birth, you know, when you carry, and if, you know, Mallory, again, potentially a HVAC, I mean, that that's still what you guys would like to experience, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I actually think that this experience, like solidified home birth more.
That's so cool.
Even more so than it was before, because the like experiencing natural labor and just seeing it, it just felt so like normal and like a part of life. And, you know, step by step, like when we needed to transfer, it was very like non-urgent.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they recommended it, I was like, no, we don't need to do that yet. But it was like, oh, we do. Like, this is the part where we transfer. Mm-hmm. Because it was just such a, like, an easy transition. Mm-hmm. And our midwife really, even before birthing time started, was very much like, I know this isn't, like, how your plan looks. But she was the one who was very much like, just because you are looking at intervention doesn't mean you have to like go full force. You can still carry the intent of a home birth with you.
Yeah.
She had said, you know, a lot of people when they're looking at, you know, their plan's not going right, they just, you know, jump right into, well, I'll just get, you know, Pitocin and epidural, like, and they just dive headfirst into intervention. And she wanted to, you know, let it be known that you don't just have to do that. Just because you're at a hospital or because you transfer, you can still carry the intent and the idea of birth and how natural it is with you along for that. Just because you need some interventions doesn't mean that you just have to, like, then completely let it be medicalized. Mm. So she had kind of, like, set that seed even before labor had started, and really let our birth team help us carry that through. But yeah, home birth for sure is, and you know, yeah, we love our birth team. And it was like, yeah, it was really wonderful to watch Mallory labor. And it was just so normal to watch. It wasn't ever like, I felt like I was like watching her in pain or that I needed to help it. It was just like, we just like wrote it out. The only time I like didn't like it was like the recovery of the cesarean. It was very hard to watch her in that kind of pain. But the labor was just, you know, just like riding the waves and taking it as it comes, and was really powerful to watch. Mm.
Well, you both are amazing. You all are awesome. And you assembled quite the crew. And I personally absolutely love the photos from your birth, from Milk and Hannah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Like,
yeah.
I've been checking them out.
She's
on. Amazing. Yeah, like these are incredible. So we're gonna put links to this page and to the Milk and Hannah, to your birth story on the Milk and Hannah website, and put some photos on our site because these are outstanding.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's an amazing person and an amazing photographer. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, I have to ask this question before we wrap up. Have you talked about plans for when you will get pregnant, Amy, or are we just like, wait, you know, is that on pause for a second and just enjoying the Sebastian oxytocin bubble?
we definitely are doing that. It's almost like anytime I don't have him like directly in my face, I just like, I have like, it's just such baby fever. Only he can cure it if he's like really, really close to me. But otherwise I'm like, oh, like babies. And our entire birth team was like, I feel like you're just going to get pregnant like immediately, but we are going to wait. I think, yeah. So that they're about like 2 years apart would be the hope. So we're going to wait at least a year. So we're looking at maybe trying, in April or May of next year, and enjoy Sebastian as an only child.
Absolutely.
For a bit, but it is, we're both itching for more of it. but it's, Sebastian's a great baby. We were originally just thinking that Mallory would have one and I would have one. And we got home with Sebastian and I was like, I could do like 12 of him.
Yeah!
Like, I love him so much. Like, I could, like, he was such a good baby and, like, eats like a champ. And, you know, I was just like, oh, like, we could have so many of him. And, you know, we, since Mallory's breastfeeding now, we're going to try and, like, end up carrying that over so that, like, the next baby we can both feed, and so on and so forth.
Very cool.
So hopefully we'll be able to co-nourish and, like, tandem nourish once I have, like, milk as well.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Matthew, why can't you do that?
I know. We couldn't do that with Sebastian just because I, like, getting a woman to lactate that's never carried is a bit more tricky.
Yeah.
So we decided that, that it'll just be, when I have a kid, then, I could actually like nurse Sebastian then, which mm-hmm. is something to look forward to. And then Mallory will be able to help and then, you know, so on and so forth. So we'll be able to team up on that.
That's really cool. That's man.
An extra benefit of having two moms.
Oh, for sure. You got the power of two uteruses going.
Yep. lots of baby food.
So. Oh, I love it. You guys are so great. I appreciate you so much. Just your whole story, everything. You have to keep us posted on just how you guys are doing. But then also when you do get pregnant again, we want to talk to you about that and the whole other journey. Just again, Amy, Mallory, and Sebastian, because he's been such a great sport hanging out with us.
Yeah, he's been very, very well behaved. So good job, buddy.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate being able to get our story out there and just talk to you too.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved. Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.